Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Command Zone. How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai, and I'm here with DJ.
I'm DJ from the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel.
That's right. He's back. You may recall DJ filled in for Jimmy while he was in New Zealand shooting Mulan. So we've missed you, man.
Yeah, hopefully everyone missed me, but it's nice to be back and just talk with you, hang out a little bit, preview some cards.
That's right. It's kind of nuts because at the time we're recording this, Modern Horizons is not even actually out yet.
Have you played it, Josh?
I did get to draft it last night while Game Nights was exporting, because it was like an hour and a half export. So I was like, I can get a draft in. And
Josh frantically gets a single draft in, and then it's like M20 right now.
That's right. Yeah, so we have our M20 preview card. It is a legendary creature. It's pretty spicy, but before we talk about that, we got to talk about our sponsors. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic product singles, right now you can order Modern Horizons, which is the new set. And probably, if you can't do it at this moment, very soon you'll be able to pre-order the core set, M20. So if you want to get a hold of this specific card, Card Kingdom, basically if you want any card, you can get it that way. And that's a good way to go. And they're going to get it to you super fast. And the other way to support the show is by supporting our other sponsor, which is Ultra Pro. So you can see here, actually, we have our legendary creature, which we haven't named yet, in an Ultra Pro sleeve. It's in an Azorius sleeve, but I don't want to confuse you. There aren't Jeskai sleeves, so
get on it, Josh.
But it is an Ultra Pro sleeve because anytime you get a card that's valuable, you put it into an Ultra Pro sleeve so it doesn't get damaged. And the final way to support all of our content is directly. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can hang out in our Discord. Jumbo Commander DJ here is one of our patrons. So
yeah, if you at Jumbo Commander in the Discord, I'll pop in and say hi and answer questions and stuff like that.
Also, DJ has his own Discord for his channel. What is your Discord?
Yeah,
his own Patreon too. What's your Patreon? Let's plug it.
Yeah, it's patreon.com/jumbocommander.
So just support all those Patreons. We really do appreciate it. It helps all of our content keep flowing. Helps Game Nights. Actually, big thank you to patrons because this latest episode of Game Nights was a monster. It was like making two episodes in the same...
Are you okay, Josh? Are you prepared to
podcast
right now?
Do you see how long my hair is? I've literally been like for 2 weeks been like, I need to get my hair cut, but I've been working 24/7 trying to get this episode out. So right after we're done here...
Come back and Josh's hair is a little bit longer, but completely
white.
Just like frazzled.
all right. I almost forgot. One thing we do is we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Ryan Batumaka. Ryan, you rock.
Thanks, Ryan.
Sorry for butchering your name. Okay, so core set 20, M20. The core sets are back.
Are you excited about them coming back?
I'm excited. I mean, it's just so hot on the heels of Modern Horizons that I feel a little fatigued, and part of it might be the whole Game Nights, like working 90 hours a week experience. But yeah, I am excited. Like, I like core sets, but it's like I wish it was a month away.
Well, a month away, isn't that Commander season then? One thing that's kind of crazy too is that I always really liked core sets. They usually bring the complexity level down, and it's going to be crazy to be like the complexity level of Modern Horizons.
Which is off the charts.
Which is crazy. And then they'll just kind of like bring it back down to like classic, like, you know, playground.
First strike and flying.
Exactly. Magic with M20.
I will say, if our preview card is any indication, it might not be as sort of simplistic as you think, because this is a complicated card.
It is. Yeah.
Do you want to read it? I'll let you read it.
Yeah, I would love to read it. It's Kaikar Winds Fury. One blue, red, white for a 3/3 legendary bird wizard. Of course, this bird has flying. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying.
So young pyromancers kind of, I guess it's Monastery Mentor, but it's a spirit, not a prowess thing. But it's not done.
But sacrifice a spirit. Add one red.
So if you sacrifice a spirit, it doesn't even have to be the ones created by Kaikar.
No, it could be any spirit. It's just free mana as you sacrifice your creatures, like a Phyrexian Altar kind of in your command zone a little bit.
Seems very, very powerful. It's a 4-mana commander, so it's going to come out early. I mean, we did a thing here that we haven't done before, which is DJ and I each separately, without talking to each other, came up with a list of cards and interactions and synergies and combos for Kaikar that we thought would be cool. But we didn't compare notes. So I have a piece of paper here with my cards on it, and he's got a piece of paper with his, and it'll be interesting to see if we came up with a lot of the same stuff, a lot of different stuff. But before we get into the specific cards, like when you saw this card, what were your initial impressions? Did you think it was powerful?
Yeah.
Was it the type of card that you didn't? And then sometimes as you start to get into it, you're like, oh, this is good, or you know, do you just think it's not that powerful?
Well, first off, I love Jeskai.
Yep.
And that's an amazing color combination. And I feel like there can be more commanders that go into that Jeskai sort of range. So that's really cool. It says cast non-creature spell. I love that way more than casting instants or sorceries.
Yep, yep.
So that token creature creation type effect.
Enchantments, artifacts.
Planeswalkers, all that good stuff. Makes me feel really good to have that. And then also, there's a little bit of spirit synergy in there, and we haven't really had a lot of spirit support. And spirits do go across five colors. So maybe there's not enough spirit support for like all of your favorite spirits, but a lot of them fall within the Jeskai color range.
Yeah, I will say, and we'll maybe get into this a little as we go down our card list, that not having black for the spirit synergies is kind of a big blow. Yeah. I think it makes it way less spirit centric in general if you want to build like a very strong version of the deck. But there are a lot of really interesting things, and the card itself is kind of pulling in interesting directions, right? There's non-creature spells, like you said.
Yeah.
There's token synergies. And then it creates mana by sacrificing creatures. So there's an aristocratsy style, right? So those three lanes, I think, are really interesting. And these types of commanders can be very powerful because there's a lot of different ways you can go. But it's also a big pitfall when you build these decks because you see a lot of people and they will build a deck like this and try and do too much, and then the deck ends up doing too little because it's not focused enough, and that's going to be a worry, I think, with Kaikar decks.
Absolutely. You want some level of balance across the board, and some of these decks that I mentioned, it actually pulls in separate directions. Like, if you're going for a spirits build, what about the non-creature spells that you get a benefit off of on your commander?
Yep.
If you're going for lots and lots and lots of non-creature spells, then is producing 1/1s enough?
I think it's very possible that you're going to see a Kaikar deck on the table, and even after they play, you know, through turn three or four, you won't be exactly sure which version of it it is. Is it like, is it doing tokens? Is it doing spirits? Is it doing some kind of storm combo-y thing? Is it doing aristocrats?
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And I also love that you could be doing one thing and then have a package to do something else where your deck kind of just, you know, oh, I'm going to go spirits. I'm going to go wide tokens, whatever feels, you know, combat-y, feels token-y a little bit. And then, boom, suddenly it pivots, and then you can start creating tons of mana. And we've been talking about it, that mana production, that just cheating mana cost is so powerful.
Yeah.
So the ability, this last ability of producing a red, you saw Josh and I, when we read that, be like, whoa, that's because that's the key to make this card really explosive.
I mean, in some respects, you can look at any non-creature spell when Kaikar's out as any spell in your hand that's a non-creature, add red mana to your mana pool.
Yeah. Right?
Which is very, very broken. Like, that's the type of thing that's breakable for sure. So I was getting my phone out because we're going to have to look up some cards because we are going to move on to the portion of the show where we start listing out some of the cards we came up with. Okay, I sort of put mine into broad categories. I don't know how you laid yours out.
I laid mine out into four distinct decks.
Okay, sweet. So let's start. Let's follow like your first deck then.
My first deck, I feel, is a pretty boring deck, and it follows along with this. It is.
But it's
just
going to be the deck
spirits
that a lot of people think about, because I can see you're at the top of your paper here.
It's just, it's spirits.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of Jeskai spirits, 262 different Jeskai spirits.
Wow. That you can stats.
It's a lot, right?
Stats from DJ.
That's right. But there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And then adding more spirits to the board could be really good. And spirits,
but most of them are creatures that are, those are all creatures, right?
Exactly. So, and so it pulls you in a different direction where you're making a spirits deck, but you're not, by playing all these spirit cards, you're not triggering your commander to generate more spirits. There are a few that kind of get around that, cards like Spectral Procession or Triplicate Spirits. Those are spells that
produce make spirits. So you just basically get one extra spirit.
Yeah.
But also you can, like, Kaikar doesn't care where the spirits came from. So the spells that make spirits do give you spirits that you can then sack for mana still.
Exactly.
So some of those spells, like, make you four mana or something for later.
Yeah. And there's something to be said about having a board full of spirits that work synergistically and then on your commander being able to cash those in for mana when you really need it.
Yeah, I gotta say, I don't think the spirit tribal version of this deck will necessarily be that great. I think missing black is huge. There's a card I wanted to call out because it is a black spirit card that would have been perfect in this deck, and I think single-handedly would have made it more viable. It's He Who Hungers, 4 and a black for a legendary spirit, a 3/2 flyer, but you can pay one, sacrifice a spirit, and target opponent reveals their hand, you choose a card from it, and that player discards that card.
It's gross, Josh.
Yeah, you thought seize them with all your spirits. Like, think of how good that one card from black would make it. I think there are some...
There's draining spirits in black, too. Like, there's other... Yeah, in green, there's really powerful spirits. It's all across the board. So,
do you have any specific cards? I think there are some, like, to me, Spirit Tribal is not something I would try to do with Kaikar, but I think some specific spirit synergies.
Yeah, well, let me convince you. Let me try to convince you. Okay, so the Spirits deck in Modern is very tempo-based and kind of aggressive, and I think that a Spirits deck with Kaikar at the helm would be something similar. So I would have some tempo-based cards, like... Nebelgast Herald.
Yep, I got that on my list too.
Because it's insane. Whenever a spirit enters the battlefield, you basically can tap something down. And that just means by casting any non-creature spell, Kaikar will produce a spirit, and then you can start tapping down your opponent's stuff. It's great. And then Nibbles of Frost.
And also, because it's non-creature spell for the to create the spirit with Kaikar, Nebelgast Herald allows you to tap things at instant speed. So that, I think, is a really big thing. Like, if you have some instance in your deck, you can, like, stop their Ulamog from attacking, you know, for a turn or two, which is huge. Like, it's not just... this is better than normal with Kaikar, I think, because of the speed at which you're allowed to create spirits.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then Nibbles of Frost is another... It's spirit, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you can tap something down and it doesn't untap. It also has prowess. So those kind of can fulfill that tappy tempo-y feel. And then there's sort of like the disruption feel where it comes like a Spell Queller is a classic.
That's a counterspell on a spirit.
Exactly. Yep. And Mausoleum Wanderer, again, it's a low drop, gets bigger.
I didn't have this on mine, yeah.
Yeah, so Mausoleum Wanderer gets power boost when you have spirits enter the battlefield, so it can get bigger and bigger and actually hit in for some damage. And then you can sacrifice it to counter a spell. But it's one of those limited counters. Mm-hmm. So again, this deck loses a lot if you start getting up into the late game when, you know, countering something by 2 or 3 mana doesn't do it, where, you know, Spell Queller has to hit something CMC 4 or less, you know, when it doesn't counter.
See, I'm not excited about putting Spell Queller in the deck because it doesn't make a spirit. And then when it gets killed, they get this spell back, like...
Spell Queller your own spell.
Sure.
When it's getting countered, and then you can sacrifice it for red mana to get your spell back.
That's some fancy play, yeah. here's one I like that's got spirit synergies, and I think synergies with Kaikar. And this could probably work even if you're not doing Spirit Tribal.
And some of the, by the way, a lot of these things can. Like if Spirit
Bonds is a really good one where you sack a spirit and you make something else indestructible, and that can protect Kaikar. And also you can sack a spirit for the colorless mana Spirit Bonds because it costs 1 and a white to activate. I think Spirit Bonds kind of just goes in the deck probably regardless.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and I think that a lot of what we might end up with in this deck might be sort of the best of each one of these categories kind of thing, or a little bit of sport.
So Twilight Drover is a card I really like. It's 2 and a white for a 1/1 spirit. Whenever a creature token leaves the battlefield, you put a 1/1 counter on it. So you make Kaikar spirits, you sack them for mana, that puts 1/1 counters on Twilight Drover, and then Twilight Drover, you pay 2 and a white and you remove a 1/1 counter, and you make 2 spirits. So that provides you with the 2 mana, and now you just need to add a white. So if you start getting, and I think a tokeny, something that's focusing on the tokens might have Anoian Procession and some of these other things, so you can start getting into these loops where maybe you could make infinite spirits or create infinite mana this way. Or just, and I say infinite as like a thing that you could do, but also like if you just have 5 white, well, you're going to end up with a bunch of spirits at the end of this. It doesn't have to be infinite. It's just
a lot.
It's a
good card on its own. Yeah. And if it just, oops, goes infinite with, you know, a lot of cards, not just like, oh, it's a 2-card infinite combo. Right. It's just like, if you reach a critical mass, you could just be so powerful with spirits coming at you.
Yeah, that I would, like, to me, leaning into the tokens is probably going to be more powerful than the spirits.
Yeah.
And I see you've got a card on here that It's Vicious Shadows, and I also have it on my...
Oh, you have it on there, too?
Yeah, so that's when a creature dies, it deals power damage equal to its power to any target.
I also like that it's all red, so you can kind of get it out earlier than usual because it is quite an expensive enchantment. And then it turns every single spirit you have into mana, but also huge amounts of damage. It's an easy way to close out a game.
And I would think, like, Purphoros...
Oh, yeah.
Because Purphoros just deals 2 damage to each opponent when a creature enters the battlefield on your side. And cards like Purphoros. So Impact Tremors is another one. Pandemonium's a dangerous one because your opponents can use it too. But on the turn, you kind of, quote unquote, do the Twilight Drover thing. You might be like, well, I can just sort of churn through about 20 spirits here before I run out of mana.
Yeah.
But if Purphoros is out, that's just 40 damage to everybody or something.
The line I also like on Purphoros too is like, okay, I'm going to attack with everything.
Yep.
Block, block, block. Okay, I'll sacrifice those to pump the rest of my team because Purphoros has an activated ability too. Doesn't need it.
That's
but
true.
Somehow does have an activated ability that pumps your team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Speaking of pumping your team, you could also play cards like Supreme Phantom or Drogskull Captain, which are anthems for spirits.
I think... You know, I was speaking of Monastery Mentor, Young Pyromancer earlier. Those seem like shoe-in cards for the deck because you may as well make other tokens as well, right?
So that means that as soon as you start including all of those, I also have Saheeli, Sublime Artificer.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because it makes servos in the same way that Young Pyromancer makes elementals.
Exactly. But it triggers off of, again, all non-creature spells and triggers herself because she's a planeswalker.
Okay.
So I like that. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we have better token producers once we move outside of spirits. I mean, Monastery Mentor is just better than a lot of these other things. Like, I know I mentioned, you know, Spectral Procession or Triplicate Spirits, but those are not impactful cards in our format.
I wouldn't probably play those, but they're actually okay because of the fact that they turn into mana.
Yeah.
So they're rituals in some way. I still don't know if I'd play them in these decks.
Well, if you're going for a heavy spirit build, you might lean into that with saying, I'm going all spirits. As soon as you pull away from there, then I think they're so much better. Like the Monastery Mentors, like the Saheelis, like a lot of different token producers. I also have Metallurgic Summoning.
Oh, yeah. This is a... Okay. So you want to explain what it does?
Yeah. So Metallurgic Summoning is...
a lot of words.
is an enchantment, and whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, basically you create an artifact that's power and toughness equal to the CMC of that instant or sorcery you cast. And then if you have so many artifacts, you can sacrifice it to get your instant sorceries back from your graveyard.
Right.
But basically it's a token producer, and it's not just producing ones, it's producing pretty significant creatures as you're casting.
And it's a non-creature spell, so it makes a spirit when it comes into play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a very powerful card. You know, I think obvious inclusions are things like Cathar's Crusade and things like that. If you're going this token-y route, Cathar's Crusade is going to make a token too when it comes into play. And, you know, as you start doing these other things where you're making a bunch of tokens with Saheeli or whatever, they just start getting huge. To me, one of the big things is if you go this route, you're going to really want haste.
Mm.
It's been my experience in Commander that, in general, if you do something big and explosive and then... pass the turn without actually converting that immediately into some kind of damage against your opponents, you're probably not going to have that stuff when it comes back to you. Or at the very least, they're going to have put up shields and walls, and it's going to be tougher to use than you want it to be.
So I have a question, Josh.
Yeah.
Is this going to end up being just a worse Locust God if we start going crazy tokens, trying to generate haste, doing all this stuff to make tokens go wide? Is everyone just saying, oh, I'm playing a clunky Locust God?
Maybe you get an additional color. You get white. So Cathars and some of that Anointed Procession does not exist in that other thing. I also think, you know, the tokens from Locust God, they already have haste. So
it makes them good.
It makes them a lot better. I don't know. I think it can be a different deck, but it could feel very similar. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to want to be a lot red in this deck because of the Sacrifice of Spirit to make it red.
Absolutely.
So you're going to lean into that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think like Dragon Tempest, Heroic Reinforcements even, are cards that you would think about playing because they give haste, they make, and they're non-creature spells that give haste. And I
like the Dragon Tempest tech right there.
I also like the fact
that's
that...
it's pretty good.
Here's the thing about Locust God. It says it on the card that the Locusts get haste.
Yeah.
So it's factored in when your opponents are playing you. Kaikar doesn't have that. So they can say in their mind... okay, well, worst case scenario makes a bunch of spirits, but I'm going to have time.
So there's something to the surprise factor of Kaikar.
Right, exactly. Where I think there are ways to go off with Kaikar and on the same turn use the stuff. where they will have sort of discounted that possibility because, like I said, with Locust God, you can't. Okay, well, what if they play Locust God? And then they do this. Okay, well, the stuff has haste naturally. Mm-hmm. So I don't even have to factor in. Like, I have to be ready for it. So I'm just going to use my board wipe now, or I'm going to do something now. Whereas somebody could be like, okay, well, I won't use my board wipe now because they, even if they make the spirits, then they still got to give them haste. So I have an additional little buffer where if you take that away, there's a surprise factor I think that could be in your favor. Where was I?
You were saying that if we're going wide, you want ways to sort of pump up. We already mentioned, you mentioned Impact Tremors. You also mentioned Purphoros, Cathar's Crusade. I have another one that kind of works with that, and that's Jeskai Ascendancy.
Oh, okay, wait, let's hold that.
You want to hold it?
Because I got a whole thing about Jeskai Ascendancy.
It's so...
Because it's one of my favorite cards.
We're talking about it. It's one of my favorite cards, too.
Anytime anything's in Jeskai, I'm like, can I use Jeskai Ascendancy?
Yes, you can in this deck.
Okay, so...
Okay, we'll talk about Jeskai Ascendancy a little bit later.
If the question was, will we come up with some of the same things, the answer is yes.
Yeah. I think actually one other key component for any of these token strategies, whether you're heavy spirits or heavy tokens, is that there is an inclination to want to sort of churn through your deck using the red mana. And so things like Warlord's Fury, which has an incidental effect, but again, it cantrips for one red mana, generates a spirit, so it's kind of like a free spell. A lot of you might be really inclined to use those, but I think in some of these, if you're going combo-y, then that's sort of built into your deck. But if you're going for more of this value generating, I would rather have spells that impact the board. So
I have a whole thing about I think there's a Storm deck. There's a Storm Kai card deck.
I think there is, too.
Yeah, I think there's 100%. And that's where you've got all these one-mana cantrips. In fact, let's talk about that deck really quick.
Well, one thing I want to warn people about is that in the Storm deck, if you look on EDH Rec, if you look at
Cathar's Crusade,
stuff like that, yeah, like you're gonna see some Storm builds of this and some Spirit builds and some sort of token value builds mixed together. And the average deck that comes out might be unplayable.
Yeah, you have to focus your deck. This is what we were talking about at the very start, where it's like, okay, if you're spirits, make sure you're focused on spirits. If you're tokens, you want to move towards that. You might share some cards.
Exactly.
If you're storm, you're probably going to be really focused on certain things, and you don't even want, you don't want giving haste to your tokens, and you don't want, pumping your tokens, and you probably don't even want making extra tokens. Like, the tokens you're using for a different purpose in the Storm deck.
Absolutely.
So the Storm...
Can I mention one more thing before I move on?
Sure.
I have next to Vicious Shadows, some sweet tech.
Okay.
Faultline. Red X deals X damage to each...
Without flying
in each player. So if you have an aggressive deck that's like getting in damage and doing stuff with spirits, just like Vicious Shadows and Purphoros can sort of drain people out, you could also have these earthquake effects where you sacrifice your creatures.
Well, you swing first. Purge.
Yeah, you swing first, other people block, and then you sacrifice all those and do this huge sort of burst of damage.
Yeah, if you ever get like 10 spirits, you swing, do a bunch of damage, then after combat, sack them all for the mana to cast Faultline or something, and then...
And then wipe the board beneath you, you know what I mean? And then also go crazy.
And reverberates and stuff, so because they just need to be at a lower life total than you, and the flying spirits will probably just get them 1 or 2 points lower than you, and then you're just like, oh, you're at 38? Okay, I'm going to Faultline for 19 and fork it.
Yeah,
I do that with Mizzix all the time. That's a cool thing. Not with the spirits, obviously. Okay, we're going to keep laying out cool cards for this Kaikar deck. But before we do, we're going to take a break and hear a message from our sponsors. Okay, we're back, and we are talking about our preview card for M20. It's Kaikar. Let's get back into it. Okay,
so let's move on to this sort of combo-y, stormy build.
Yeah, so I think there's a Storm deck, and I think it's probably the most powerful, quote-unquote, deck as far as like...
Ooh, I disagree. Let's talk about this.
Okay. I mean, I think this deck, I think you probably do the Cheerios rebuild, paradoxical outcome thing similar to Urza. Mm-hmm. So you've got Hercule's Recall rebuild, paradoxical outcome, those type of cards that bounce all your artifacts, or sometimes everybody's artifacts, back to their hand. You got a bunch of cheap artifacts. You got Kaikar. Now all your artifacts are rituals. Some of them draw you cards because of paradoxical outcome. Then you have the one mana red cantrips that you talked about. So there's a ton. Crash Through, Warlord's Fury, Crimson Wisp, Expedite, Overmaster, Renegade, Tactics, Ryle. There's a few more. Even the two mana red cantrips, you need them to be red because you have to use the spirit
to cast them.
You can probably have a couple blue ones.
You can have a few where this is like really impactful.
You've also
got ones that dig pretty deep, or I would use blue for tutoring effects, basically, like Mystical Tutor or Merchant Scroll, things like that.
And then you got the wheel effects. And then you've got some of the like Faithless Looting type effects that you can also probably put in there to churn through, because what you're going to end up with is a bunch of lands in your hand at one point. And you've got Aetherflux Reservoirs and things like that to sort of finish it out. And I think, and you're in blue, so blue's the best color finding artifacts, so Aetherflux is not that hard. And you've got white for Enlightened Tutor, so finding an Aetherflux, or there's a few different storm cards you could use in the slot, but Aetherflux is probably the best one. Aetherflux is almost Paradox Engine good these days. Like, I feel like I lose that
Aetherflux
card.
Aetherflux is very good.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think that storm deck focused in that direction, very powerful, because now all your cards are rituals, and that's what storm decks want. So
Storm decks want three things. They want card draw, they want mana, and
they want
the last
spells
thing
that,
they don't. The last thing is
they
basically
want to cast spells.
They eventually want some way to close out the game, but that's actually like way at the bottom of the priority list.
You just want to cast a spell and break even on it as far as cards and mana.
Yeah,
Kaikar can do that because you can do the part where it breaks even on cards and it gives you mana back.
I'm wondering if there's a critical mass of cards in red that will... I agree that the mana is there. The mana is totally there. I'm wondering if there's a critical mass of cards that'll get more cards into your hand. I think that the wheels are really good for that, like, you know, Wheel of Fortune, even the blue sort of wheel effects, Time Twister, brand new Time Twister, things like that. I'm just wondering if red has enough of a critical mass of these cards to churn through enough of your deck.
I think that you can probably get up to close to 20 of them, and that's going to be plenty.
That's going to be, if you do get up to 20, that is going
to
be plenty.
And counting some blue tutors and stuff to go find some of that stuff. And then also, blue does help you a lot in that realm. And also, like, white can maybe help you with Anointed Procession somewhere in there. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting 2 mana back on all your spells, and, like, it can kind of get nuts. I think the Cheerios aspect could be definitely a part of it, because playing a bunch of zero-cost stuff, making a bunch of spirits, bouncing it back to your hand with Rebuild, Hercule's Recall, Paradoxical Outcome, drawing a bunch of cards, recasting the stuff. Now you've cast like 12, 14 spells in a turn. If you draw one of your storm spells, you probably just win at that point. Like, I think this deck exists. It's not Urza. It's not like probably...
Yeah, but do you know what? You've convinced me. I thought that there was... because again, it's mana in cards and I wasn't worried about the mana. I was worried about the card generation in red because red is... a little bit unreliable when it comes to card
but
draw.
Blue can help
but
you.
I think that you've convinced me enough. You're throwing high tide in there. But this mana. I mean, I think you convinced me that there's enough of red card draw to just keep churning through your deck.
Yeah. So that I think is a deck. Mana Echoes is another card I wanted to call out there,
which is
a card that anytime a creature enters the battlefield, you get colorless mana equal to the number of creatures that share creature type with it. So this gets out of control really fast with the spirits. And then, you know, you can sack them for red so you can get colored in there too. I think that's a big one. So yeah, I think that storm deck is real. And I think most likely as far as the top tier, most powerful version of Kaikar, that's probably it in my book. Could be wrong, but
yeah, I think so. Wait, because what it does is it circumvents the whole combat phase and the combat phase is very problematic in our format. It's easy to interact with. And the fact that you
what
can just
go has
completely
has
around
what
it.
If they just have a constant miss in hand? What if they have, there's so many ways they're ready for that. And also I think inherently the most powerful part of this card is actually the Sacrifice of Spirit add red. Cause anything that is creating mana in another way, Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar are like two of the most powerful cards, in all of magic. And so, to me, that's leaning into that part. Let's talk about.
Well, what about, does Jeskai Ascendancy play a part in your storm build?
I think it absolutely could go in that deck. And Jeskai Ascendancy is, let's read the card, and I want to read it exactly here. Anytime a commander is in Jeskai, I immediately am like, can I play Jeskai Ascendancy? And this is kind of tailor-made for it, right?
So does Dramatic Scepter go in this build as well? The Dramatic Scepter is Isochron Scepter, which, by the way, belongs in a lot of the versions of this deck because it can cast these low CMC cards. And then it's Dramatic Reversal, which untaps all non-land permanents. So if you have it also untaps the Scepter and untaps all your mana rocks and can kind of just go crazy with casting spells.
Yeah, it's hard on these shows to say, yes, that card goes in, but probably, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're really early on here. EDH Rec doesn't know this card exists, so we have nobody else besides the two of us that we can consult. And so it's hard to get into the real minutia of, like, exactly what cards go in.
Yeah.
But I could see that card going in. It probably does, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So Jeskai Ascendancy, let's talk about this card because it's awesome. And I think it will be ridiculous in this deck. So it's A blue, a red, and a white for an enchantment. It says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Untap those creatures.
Love it.
So you have a bunch of spirits. You're already casting non-creature spells. It pumps your spirits. But it also says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. So you loot.
It's great.
What tends to happen if you're doing the stormy stuff, or even if you're not really, if you're doing this value-based, though, like I'm playing a one-mana red cantrip that draws a card, makes a spirit, which creates the red mana that I just used, so I broke even, you'll end up with just a glut of lands in your hand after doing that for a little while, because you can only play one for turn, and then, you know, eventually you're drawing real cards half the time or whatever, for 60% of the time. But,
yeah.
Well, Jeskai Ascendancy lets you start ditching those lands every time you cast a non-creature spell to then get another card that, you know, it just basically ups your chance of getting not lands, churns through your deck super fast, helps you find whatever card you need in that moment. It also pumps your tokens, which you can often activate Jeskai Ascendancy like 20 times in a turn. It's not actually that hard. That's the crazy thing about this card. Traditionally, a lot of people have tried to use it with like mana untapping creatures.
Yeah.
To try, because it untaps the creatures too.
I had a four color version with Kaidel.
Yeah.
So as you draw, you can untap Kaidel, and then, you know, it taps for a ton of mana and stuff like that.
Yeah. I kind of call it like the fair Paradox Engine almost. Like,
yeah, I can see
that. Because it's similar to what Paradox Engine's doing. Every time you cast a spell, you're untapping stuff. And yeah. If you build, but it's way more narrow because it's in three specific colors. It only untaps creatures. But still, anything that's comparable to Paradox Engine, you know, is crazy powerful.
Yeah.
So again, I think you can put this in the Storm deck and it's probably good just because of the loot thing. That's really what you want there.
Now, would you have mana or untappers in this deck, like your favorite Fate Stitcher? The Vizier of...
Vizier of Tumbling Sands?
Yeah, the one that untap there. Would you include those? Because that can give you positive mana.
Right.
But again, I feel like we have mana taken care of on our commander,
yeah,
and card draw is what we're really looking towards.
Yeah, I don't like building the whole deck because of one enchantment that's in the deck, right?
And just but it's such a cool enchantment.
No, it's awesome. I'm kidding. Yeah, it's awesome. And you could, in these colors, right? Again, you have Idyllic, you have Enlightened Tutor, you can find Jeskai Ascendancy probably if you want to. Worst case scenario, you could actually Merchant Scroll or Mystic Tutor for the Enlightened Tutor to find the thing.
That's some card advantage right there.
But if it's that good in your deck. So you could build the deck to just, it's going to find Jeskai Ascendancy every game. But that seems a little bit boring. So I wouldn't put Fate Stitcher and Tumbling Sands and that kind of stuff necessarily in the deck. However, it's still really good with all the other stuff that's going on.
Great.
So like these one mana red cantrip things are really good with Jeskai Ascendancy, because even worst case scenario, just making like your spirits into 6/6s and swinging for 36 is pretty good.
Yeah, this is going to be great in the fair versions of this deck as well. So even the one that has Monastery Mentors and, I'll path this, I'll swords this, I'll...
All my stuff's 3/3s.
Cathartic Reunion and draw some more stuff. Oh my gosh, I accidentally made everything huge.
Yeah, it's
going to be great.
Yeah, these five tokens I have, they're all 11/11s now. What happens?
And it has that sneaky factor too, like what you're saying, is that, you know, you're not really afraid of 5/1/1s. They don't have haste or whatever like that, and then suddenly they just become a really big threat out of nowhere.
I also think the Cheerios and the same thing, the rebuild and the Hercules Recall and the Paradoxical Outcome work really good with Jeskai Ascendancy. You play Jeskai Ascendancy and you go zero mana artifact, zero mana artifact, zero mana artifact, zero mana artifact. All of those are looting you. They're pumping the spirits you already have. They're making new spirits. You bounce them all back to your hand. Do it again. There's also combo-y stuff you can do with Jeskai Ascendancy. So Retraction Helix.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a card that gives a creature the ability to tap and unsummon something, or is it boomerang something?
Oh, I don't know.
It bounces something back to their hand. Let me look up Retraction Helix so I can get it right. But with Jeskai Ascendancy, what you can do is you can bounce one of your zero mana artifacts.
So it's got to be boomerang.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. So if you had a zero mana artifact and you have, say, Kaikar with Retraction Helix on it, so it can now tap and bounce a non-land permanent.
Yep.
You play the zero mana artifact, you tap Kaikar, return it to your hand, you play it. Because of Jeskai Ascendancy, it untaps Kaikar. And now you're in an infinite loop.
And by the way, if that's a mana crypt, then suddenly you're not only creating infinite spirits, you're also creating infinite red mana and infinite colorless mana. It's crazy. Yeah.
Even if it's a basalt monolith.
Soul ring. Yeah, you're right.
Like they at least, basalt doesn't, but the other ones do, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it makes the mana to cast it. So yeah. So you're in this loop where you're just...
Wow.
Yeah. And so that with Purphoros, Impact Tremors, that with Vicious Shadows. Vicious Shadows can even be in your hand because you're going to make enough... enough spirits, you just go, I make a million spirits, then for I sack seven of them, cash Vicious Shadows. Now I sack the other 999,000 or whatever.
It could be, you could have your, when you have infinite mana, you can kind of have your choice of kill conditions.
Right. So, and again, Jeskai Ascendancy loots you. So as soon as you get that going, you're drawing basically your entire deck, you're finding whatever cards you want. This is, and again, people get mad when we talk about infinite combos. You don't have to go infinite. You can go a lot. You know what I mean? Like,
it's true.
Yeah. Jeskai Ascendancy, Retraction Helix. I don't have a zero mana cost artifact, but what I do have is five non-creature spells. I'm going to bounce. Right?
That's still really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it's still really
yeah,
good.
So,
it's crazy.
Yeah. So I like that. I have another card that I think fits into this shell, and I'm not exactly sure where. It's called... Intruder Alarm, everybody knows about. Intruder Alarm is a card, but that's not the one I was talking about. Intruder Alarm is creatures do not untap during their controller's untap phase, but whenever any creature comes into play, you untap all creatures. So it's the same as Jeskai Ascendancy, sort of, with the Retraction Helix thing.
Yeah.
Because...
Very combo-y.
Yeah. Faces of the Past, and this is one Murph found when we were talking about the card.
Good on you, Murph.
Faces of the Past is 2 and a blue for an enchantment. Whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from play... Tap or untap all creatures that share a creature type with it. So same sort of thing, because you sack one of your spirits, and that'll untap all your other spirits. So again, it would work with the Retraction Helixes and other things like that. So,
okay.
It would also work with another card I think is really good in deck, which is Opposition.
Oh, yeah. Opposition is good in token decks.
It's just oppressive. It's good in the Locust God deck, too.
It's oppressive, huh?
You can tap one of your creatures to tap, what, a land, creature, or artifact. And so you can just kind of lock down your opponents.
Yeah.
If you have that in an Intruder Alarm or that in Faces of the Past, you can lock down all your opponents.
It's crazy, yeah.
Because you just tap their Lancer in their upkeep.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah. Okay. What else you got?
Okay. I think I got one other deck that I just kind of like personally, and that's a Planeswalker build. I don't think people are thinking about that. They might be thinking about a lot of spells, these Spellslinger decks, but Planeswalkers are also non-creature permanents. And creating a 1-1 blocker, something to gum up the air or whatever, could be really good in these Planeswalker-type builds. I like the color combination, and so I think this could be a really fun strategy supporting Planeswalkers.
Yeah,
I also have an itch to play Planebound Accomplice, too.
Oh, yeah, that card's ridiculous. I want to say that Planeswalkers, most of the best ones have an option to create some kind of a token because the token protects them. So Kaikar does that, right? It makes that token when they're cast. And so that automatically makes all Planeswalkers like a little better with Kaikar because they're doing the thing of the best Planeswalkers do, which is protecting themselves.
Exactly. And you want protection for your Planeswalker build so you can do an awesome Super Friends deck.
And they don't just get attacked down immediately,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. That doesn't have attacks and can come down. And then with the brand new Sarah the Benevolent, you can pump your spirit slightly bigger.
Broken.
Broken.
What do you think the best Planeswalkers are for this deck?
I think Planeswalkers that draw you into more stuff. So yeah. I like 6-mana Chandra that lets you wheel your hand. I really like the Jaces that can sort of pressure. Like for even like 4-mana Jace, Jace Architect of Thought.
Yep.
They can shrink your opponent's attacks, which make your blockers more relevant. And then it could be really fun to then start doing stuff like Gideoning.
Narset.
Ooh, Narset's good too.
The new Narset just draws you a card because you have a lot of non-creatures.
New Narset draws you a card.
Yeah, and they can't draw extra cards, which is actually really relevant. If you've been in a game where Narset's out, it will mess you up.
Narset's sneaky good, guys. Yeah. You should be playing Narset in a lot of
different
decks.
Also, you can have wheels and stuff in your deck. Yeah. You know.
Josh takes my cute Planeswalker deck and makes it mean all of a sudden.
I was going to say, you can have what wheels happened? And stuff in your deck, but after that, you will have those, but you won't have friends.
Yeah.
I like this idea a lot. I think the Planeswalker, Jeskai Planeswalkers could be powerful, and it's not a build we see very much.
No, so. It's because I think that this Jeskai itself, like, what are the decks that we think of when we think of Jeskai?
Narset.
Yeah, we think of Narset. Shuyun, by the way, could be one that has a little bit of parallels to this that might work out. But that's such a specific deck that you either see it built one way or you don't see it at all. I love the flexibility of this card, that there really are different ways to make it viable, make it awesome.
Okay, well, now it's up to you. You have to choose your own path. Do you want to go Spirits, Tokens, Storm, Planeswalkers? Wow, Kaikar has a lot of play, a lot of different ways that you can build. And now it's time for To the Listeners. And the question is, what do you think about Karkar? Which direction would you want to go with it? And are there any cool combos or synergies that we didn't talk about that you've thought of? Because we can't think of them all. That, trust me, that has been made abundantly clear in past preview card episodes where people are like, what about this card? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
Didn't think of that one. Yeah, sorry. Also...
And that happened with us right now. Like, you mentioned cards that I was like, oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. Yeah. And I was thinking that, you know, Storm might be a little bit limited. And then Josh is like, no, look at this. The idea of retracting all your artifacts back and replaying them. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And our comment section on the YouTube video can really be a place people can look at after they've watched the video to get additional sort of, I call it the brain trust ideas, because it'll take a little while for EDHREC and everything else once this is out.
Yeah, the comment section basically solves this general in like every single way. So great job down there.
All right, and if you want to pick up this card or anything from Modern Horizons or pre-order M20 at the point this video is out, I'm not sure what cards have been spoiled, but there are probably some awesome ones based on this commander. I mean, we have to speculate. There's a decent chance that there are more three-color commanders in this set, I hope.
Yeah.
Would you think that, based on this, right? Like, they're not just going to have one three-color commander.
No, you're absolutely right. So, I totally think so.
So there's probably a bunch of cool stuff in M20 you want to pick up, and what you should do is go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, use that affiliate link when you order your Magic product, singles, anything at all. You really are supporting this show, game nights, extra turns, all of our content. We really appreciate it. And when you get the card, do like I did and put it in an Ultra Pro sleeve. Maybe not an Azorius one. Maybe they'll make some Jeskai ones. Does Jeskai even have a logo?
Yeah,
it does. Okay, they should make...
It's on the cons stuff.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. They probably have to go back to cons or something to make that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're go back just... to cons and then Ultra Pro will print all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay, well, you could also put it in just a clip sleeves because those are just
We're
like
going back to cons
blue.
Block.
I can't wait.
We both loved that block. Oh, it's favorites. So good.
Yeah. So... Ultra Pro stuff protects all your cards. It makes your battlefield look better. And
it's
got Fibblesip over here.
I know,
which is
I love it so much.
Our buddy Jesper Ising did the art for this one. And Ultra Pro playmats are the best in the biz. Okay, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. You have something cool.
I do, Josh. There's a podcast that I knew you would love because it's super well produced.
Yep.
And
it's true crime.
And it's true crime. It's To Live and Die in LA. And it is beautifully written and put together. And it is chilling and engaging and enthralling. It's about a young aspiring
actress. Yep.
Who lives in Los Angeles, who disappears.
Yep. And an investigative journalist kind of tries to put the pieces of the puzzle together. The police are still doing active investigation while it's going on, interviews the different people involved and starts to,
I think there's two aspects that make this really compelling.
Yeah.
Number one is this is a Rolling Stone journalist.
Yep.
And so he brings a different style of reporting that I think I feel in the podcast.
Yeah.
That it's really engaging and he really gets us into sort of different aspect that you would get rather than just a news reporter. Something
right.
Like that.
He's got better prose.
Oh yeah. And then the second thing that really like chilled me in the very beginning is there was a trailer to this that really got me hooked. And it's like, hey, if you go to the LAPD website, it says basically you might want to hire a private investigator to find a missing person because there's very little we can do.
Which is nuts when you think about it.
It's so nuts.
But I mean, when you're in a huge city like LA, New York, Chicago, the caseload is so high that a lot of people find themselves in this situation. They shouldn't, but that's just the truth of it. I think the third thing that's compelling about this story, as you may have noticed, I've listened to the show. I never got around to an end step, I guess. Is he's kind of doing it very close to when it's happening.
Within a week.
Right? So usually you get these true crime dramas and it's a cold case or it's something from years ago. This is not the case in this one. It's literally like unfolding it in some points as... I mean, she's disappeared obviously when he starts, but... He starts doing it it's not 20 years after the disappearance. It's not 2 years after the disappearance.
When he's interviewing people, it's 2 weeks after this has happened and they're still frazzled and
You don't run into podcasts that are that on top of the thing because it usually takes a while for them to even figure out that, oh, this was an interesting story. Let's tell it.
Yeah.
This guy's like, this is going to be an interesting story. I think let's go.
Yeah, the private detective reached out to him when the crime was still happening essentially. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. So To Live and Die in L.A., We know you like podcasts because you're listening to this one. That one's worth checking out. Another podcast that's worth checking out is our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast, or just type in Masters of Modern into YouTube because they're doing videos now, or you can find them at collected.company right next to us.
I threw my paper far too early.
But our editors have changed since last time you were here.
That's why I need to read them.
We just have more editors.
I threw the paper and Josh got more editors since I was here. I'm DJ. You can find me at the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel. I talk about all sorts of Commander stuff.
What's your Twitter?
At Jumbo Commander. Follow me on Twitter.
Definitely follow him on Twitter because DJ just talks a lot about Commander and stuff. So if you like the show and us, you'll like that.
Our editors are Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, and Jared Lefinier.
Frenier.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for this lovely art behind us.
This is the, that's that pain land that you can sacrifice to draw a card from Modern Horizons.
Horizon lands.
Yeah. It's the Steam Vent Horizon land. Islet? So something good. Islet?
It's beautiful. And look at the animation on there. It's just awesome.
Good job,
Living
Jeffrey.
Cards MTG.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everyone.
See you next time.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.